Bob and my mother had moved in together after the divorce. He was a longshoreman, and he often brought us goodies from the port. He suffered from a terrible temper, but he kept a drawer full of Kit Kats in the kitchen and always offered us one after a fit of rage. We'd heard Bob's story many times. When he was 19, he'd hitchhiked all over the world, and because of what he saw, he became a revolutionary. After Salvador Allende was elected in Chile, Bob hitchhiked there to offer his support. Lots of foreigners had done that. Allende was the first Marxist president in the world to take power through an election. He believed it was possible to make revolutionary changes without a revolution. Bob spent a year in Santiago, helping to build houses in the New Havana shantytown. Then the coup happened with General Augusto Pinochet, whom Allende had recently appointed commander-in-chief of the armed forces, at the helm. When the military raided New Havana, Bob was arrested and put in the National Stadium, which wasn't for soccer games anymore but had become a concentration camp. Bob had a line about that. "It was during my time there that I became a revolutionary with a capital R," he would say. He got this look in his eyes sometimes, and his Adam's apple started quivering. My mother explained that it had to do with what had happened to Bob in the stadium during those 2 weeks, and what he saw happen to other people. Three Canadians were being held in Chile right after the coup, and the Canadian embassy got them out. Out of jail, out of the country, and onto the dictatorship's blacklist. When Bob got back to Canada, he formed a solidarity committee and organized a cross-country caravan. They set up camp on Parliament Hill until the Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau, agreed to offer asylum to Chilean refugees. We'd been one of the first families to arrive, and Bob had helped us from the start. He became my gringo uncle after a while, then my stepfather, and now he was supposed to be my father, which was kind of funny. I guessed people would believe Ale and me because Bob was black Irish. That's how he explained his black hair and beard. Black Irish, raised on the wrong side of the tracks. My heart burst for him, for the fact he had almost died for Chile. My mother continued with a new official story. "We were to tell people she was Peruvian," she said. "The Chilean blood that ran through our veins could be no more. Our family was moving south because Bob was starting an import-export company. We'd shopped at the mall for the first time ever to put together a middle-class look. It all made sense now. My mother's Charlie's Angels attire, Ale and I in our brand new shoes, all the rage with her white platforms and blue suede tops, the Pepsi logo stitched on the side. We had to look normal. Mainstream. We had to stand out for the right reasons from now on, not the wrong ones." Lots of our friends in Vancouver had come straight from the detention centers in Chile. They'd arrived with crooked spines, missing an eye or their balls or nipples or fingernails, like Rulo. He'd been held in the Dawson Island concentration camp near Antarctica, and he was skinny as a skeleton when we picked him up at the airport. He was carrying a charango, a little guitar made from an armadillo shell. Rulo was 17 when he landed in Vancouver, and Bob had taken him in. Rulo had tried to teach me how to play his tiny charango, but it was too hard to get my fingers into the right position. So I taught him the hustle instead. He really liked that. I tuned back into my mother as she squeezed our hands. "To be in the resistance is a matter of life and death. To say the wrong thing to the wrong person is a matter of life and death. And it's impossible to know who the wrong person is. You must assume that everybody is the wrong person. In the resistance, we agree to give our lives to the people for a better society. I'm asking a lot of you, but you must remember that the sacrifices you'll have to make are nothing compared with the majority of children in this world. So many of them die of curable diseases and work 12-hour shifts in factories without ever learning to read and write. We are fighting for a society in which all children have the right to a childhood. I'm so proud of you girls for being a part of that." I was glad my mother had chosen to take us along, because I wanted to fight for the children, for the people of the world. I thought about the sacrifices Rulo had made. He told us he'd handed his bones over to be broken methodically by the military, and he'd do it all again if he had to. He'd shown me his scars and let me touch them. Our sacrifice, my mother said, was a bit different. It would involve us acting as if we were rich, pretending to be something we were not. I swallowed past the stupid knot in my throat. It felt as if a huge vitamin pill had gotten stuck in there. That's all I can say for now, my mother was explaining, so please don't ask me any questions. When one is in the resistance, one simply does what one is told to do. And for the time being, you will not be able to send letters or postcards to anybody. Her cigarette made a sizzling sound as she stamped it out in the ashtray. She kept her gaze down, avoiding our eyes. I thought of the stationery from Chinatown in my carry-on bag. My father had given it to me with explicit orders to write often. I remembered him that morning, seeing us off at the airport, his shoulders heaving. "My girls, my girls, my girls," he'd murmured in our ears, his hands clutching the backs of our heads.